You're on a GLP-1, but now you're wondering, how do I manage my side effects? What do I eat to stay strong? Because reaching your weight loss goals can take more than meds. That's where Weight Watchers Med Plus comes in. Get access to trusted experts, food plans that work with your body, and habit coaching to keep you on track. Plus access to GLP-1 medication. Get started at WeightWatchers.com. All medical services are provided through our affiliated medical group, Weight Watchers Clinic. Medications require eligibility and prescription. Individual results may vary. See site for more details.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
I am Sir Jimmy of House of Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Jamie 9 of A Storm of Swords. Is this the last Jamie chapter?
It is. I just looked it up.
Okay. How you doing, Matt? You doing good?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. I feel bad because last time we talked about doing a raven. Did we talk about that? We didn't actually say we were going to do it on the show. But we had a raven, and we knew we have to do that next time. Someone did send us a raven, and I don't think we said it on the show. I think you and I talked about it afterwards. We said we might get to it, but we didn't mention it in the show.
Okay.
But it is a cool raven, and it came to us from Sir Doug Walter, who of the Burning River.
Nice.
Sir Douglas of the Burning River. And basically he said, and we'll have to remember this for next time. So he asked, what group of seven would you want to defend you by a trial?
Oh, we did talk about this.
I think you and I talked about it after the show was over.
We did.
So yes, we want to we do this. And his question was specifically Kingsguard, but Jimmy and I want to open it up to be, I feel like any non-supernatural fighter. Because I was thinking about this too, and I was like, well, if it's only knights, then like Jon Snow would be exempt. Or like Horn Halfhand. Or, you know.
Well, it depends. Is Corn Halfhand Arthur Dayne, or
could be? So I think So we'll try and do that. Make sure we do that next week, and we will open it up to any non-supernatural fighter.
Book only, by the way.
Book only. Yeah, you can't have show Jon Snow because that's too overpowered.
Yeah, he fought an entire army.
Well, and he like defeated multiple White Walkers, which trumps everything. So you really know, So that is unfair. So, I'm doing good. I was thinking about that. And I wanted to get that out. But yes, this is Jamie, and I just looked it up. I just looked up Boiled Leather. The next time we will be with Jamie, we would have been with him sooner if we were jumping straight into A Feast for Crows. But it looks like the first Jamie chapter will be chapter 16, but it is A Feast for Crows 9. So,
okay. Interesting.
So yeah, but I'm doing good, man. You know, just busy. I know you and I are both just busy, just
drowning in work.
Yeah, same. It's just like work and like we're doing. I just feel like we're doing a bunch of stuff around the house.
It's that time of year, dude. It's that time of year.
That spring cleaning. It's like super windy outside right now. I could lose power. Our fence has been hanging on by a thread for years, and I was like, man, today might be the day.
No, I thought you just got a fence put in.
No, we got an HVAC put in.
Something in your yard. I could have sworn you did.
Oh, we got a new yard.
Yeah, how does that work? Did you just get a truck that drops off a yard? Like, what is that?
Oh, dude, it was pretty cool, actually. They came, and our backyard has like a French drain and all this stuff. So there's just a lot of, and it's like, we're in a really bad water table. So we have like multiple sump pumps and stuff like that. And so we had half of our backyard converted to wood chips, which is fantastic. Oh, it's so much better now.
So you got the mow?
No, it's just wood chips.
That's nice.
They came in, they cleared it out, put a tarp in. And then we had the big strip that goes back towards like our shed. You've been here once. And, you know, we had them completely resaw. They took it all out, down to dirt, and then completely resawed and put in a whole new backyard. So it's really nice now.
Is there any concern with termites and wood chips?
I don't know.
I'm just curious.
I don't know.
Do you guys have bad termites out there?
I don't think so.
They're pretty bad here. Yeah.
We have bugs. People come spray like quarterly.
Yeah, I have that too, and I don't want to pay for it. But I'm like, you know, if you have termites, like get into your like, you know, the base of your house, the foundation is what I'm trying to say. If there's any wood in it, like you're screwed. Yeah. Like it's over. Yeah. So it's like you kind of have to do it, but you're like, do I really need this?
I don't know, man. I do not have termites, so I don't know.
Not me either, because I pay a bug guy that comes. <It's good. laughs> I think he's protecting us.
Well, I feel like our guy definitely protects us, man. He is, I don't know, I can't remember his name, but he is all about it. He was like, tell me about the, he's like, oh yeah, we got this. So we had this one guy for a really long time. I'm sure people are loving this conversation. And this one guy for a really long time, his name was Duncan, by the way.
No.
Yeah, it was sweet. His name was Duncan. He was our bug guy. And then I think he quit. I think he moved on to something else. But like, cause sometimes we'd have to call him and be like, hey, you know, we're seeing ants in here. Cause after they spray, then a lot of stuff, they move in.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of bad 1 year. And he came over, he's like, legally I'm not allowed to spray again. There's like some sort of law against, you know, he's like,
yeah,
but I did anyway. And so
I wonder if his new job is being a hedge knight.
Maybe, but his name literally was Duncan, and now we have some other guy. I think his name's Kyle, or I don't know.
Kyle. Oof.
Yeah. He's a really nice guy. He talked to me about like the, he's like, oh, like he's like, yeah, he's like, you know, some of the other people like to use this stuff. He's like, but I went to this ant conference, and I was like, okay, dude. he's like, yeah, but you know, all these people at the conference and they loved this stuff. And I was like, okay, man, he's in deep into bug killing, which is the kind of person you'd want. I mean, it comes across as really weird. You're like, okay, dude,
hey, you don't want to babysit, but.
Right, you know what I mean? It's like, but it's like, I guess you would want that person who's like as hardcore into it and probably follows bug people on like Twitter and TikTok. Is there bug content? I don't
know. Is there bug tube? Is that bug talk? Is that a thing?
Hey, speaking of not bug tube, but book talk, by the way, because I know This is your realm. I did start Dungeon Crawler Carl.
All right, what do you think?
It's okay. I'm not super far into it. Listen to the audiobook. I can see the appeal of it.
Yeah, the video game aspect. I thought maybe you'd like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna finish the first book. My brother will not stop talking to me about it.
Supposedly gets really good later on. Like,
yeah,
really
good. He said that he's like finished. He's like the first book is okay. He's like, the second book is really where it picks up. So I'm working my way through. But I figured I'd let you know because I know that's your realm.
Yeah, whenever you mentioned it, I was like, oh, actually, that could work because you love audiobooks and it's a phenomenal audio performance. And then obviously the video game tie-in, which, speaking of video games, and Sir Duncan the Tall, I decided to finally install Oblivion, Elder Scrolls Oblivion Remastered, and I'm cosplaying in that game as Sir Dunk the Tall.
There we go.
Yeah. First time I ever played Oblivion. Never played it.
Oh, how are you liking it?
It keeps crashing.
What
in the hell?
The original game did that too.
Oh, I'm sure it did. It's Bethesda. But I was like, man, it remastered. It looks beautiful. I was like, this is awesome. The combat's horrifically bad because it's just
different.
It's just so old. It's old. I mean, it just hold down the button. It's very Minecrafty. But it just keeps crashing, and it makes me irate when it does. I think I found a fix for it, thankfully, but I was rolling around like Sir Dunk the Tall.
Okay. All right. I'm not playing any, I really am not playing any video games right now. I wish I was, but I've been busy with guitar. You got me back all into guitar. So
yeah.
I've been soldering. You got me like, I got my soldering iron out, and I'm like, you know, swapping electronics and upgrades. And
over here, I'm just trying to play bar chords, but I mean, right. I have too many things going on. I got a guitar. I'm trying to still maybe play some video games. I have golf. I have
jiu-jitsu.
All the content stuff. Now, jiu-jitsu has been on hold for a while. I don't think I'm ever going back, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I stopped going. I mean, also, like, I've done it. You know, I did it for 6-7 years. And
right.
I got pretty damn good at it. And the difference between, like, purple to black belt is, you know, it's significant, but it's like a couple percentage points, right? Like, a white to a purple is a crazy jump. And right. I was like, do I want to pay like another $30,000 over these years to be really good at jiu-jitsu against other people at jiu-jitsu, or am I happy where I'm at? And I was like, I think I'm happy where I'm at. Plus, I was just getting injured all the time. And honestly, stopping jiu-jitsu, one of the best decisions I've ever made. I know a lot of people are like, start jiu-jitsu is the greatest moment of my life, bro. And I'm like, yeah, it was pretty good. You know, it was better quitting, actually. I feel way better.
Oh, good. Good. Okay. Well, I don't think there's really that much news in the Song of Ice and Fire realm right now. You know, there's still the whole Warner Brothers, Paramount, Netflix. Gotta wait and see what
extravaganza
happens.
I mean,
George Martin has not posted anything.
He tweeted, I think today or yesterday, that there are scammers apparently acting as if they're George.
I did just see that. Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
But no actual like really any kind of Song of Ice and Fire news.
Yeah, nothing until probably House of the Dragon, if I had to guess.
Yeah. So that's just where we're at, man. Just hanging
out. I mean,
out.
We did have a lot of George stuff come out.
Oh, like, God, there was a ridiculous amount of news with all of the 97 Kingdoms, which is fantastic. I have more and more people now telling me they watched it because I can binge it. Like, oh, hey, awesome. Yeah, I watched that new Game of Thrones show, which is what people say, by the way. They call it the new Game of Thrones show.
Of course they do. I've heard a couple people out in the wild, which I never hear anybody talk about any TV show, to be honest with you. It's just not something that ever comes up in conversation. But like, I've overheard people in public talking about it, so that's always cool.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, I think we can dive into today's chapter, which is the last Jaime chapter of a Storm of Swords, I should say. And that is Jaime 9. So Jaime is seated with the small council as King Tommen signs all the papers brought before him by Sir Kevin. The Lannisters are granting Riverrun to Sir Emmon Frey and Kevin's sister, Genna, once the Blackfish has surrendered. They legitimize Ramsay Snow and name Roose Bolton Warden of the North. Sir Rolf Spicer is granted Castamere and raised to Lord. And Lord Gawain Westerling and his wife and daughter Jane are all granted a royal pardon, along with Lord Jonas Bracken, Lord Vance, Lord Goodbrook, and Lord Mouton for entering King Tommen's service. Jaime has recently lost during a spar with Sir Adam Marbrand and is disgusted that he cannot fight left-handed, especially after receiving his new Valyrian steel sword from his father. Outside, Jaime watches Steelshanks Walton and his men prepare to leave King's Landing and sees a girl who claims to be Arya Stark. Jaime is pretty sure she is not the real Arya, yet she is to be presented to Roose Bolton and Ramsay Bolton at the Dreadfort. Sir Gregor's screams from Pycelle Solar can be heard throughout the Red Keep, for Lord Tywin has demanded that the Grand Maester heal him so that the King's justice can execute him, in hopes of placating Dorne and House Martell, who are likely to be outraged by Prince Oberyn's death. Jaime recalls his father mentioning that Stannis and his fleet have left Dragonstone, leaving only a token force to guard the island. Unlike Pycelle, Tywin believes Stannis has not conceded defeat. He has only left Dragonstone because he intends to continue fighting elsewhere. He will likely fail if he goes to Storm's End and tries to rally the Stormlands. But if Stannis wins Dorne to his cause, he can prolong the war for months or even years. So Tywin will not give Dorne any reasons to side with Stannis. Later, Cersei visits him in the White Sword Tower and reveals that their father plans to send her back to Casterly Rock and so that he will have a free hand in raising Tommen. In addition to marrying Tommen to Margaery Tyrell, but Jaime refuses to talk to their father to convince him otherwise. The conversation turns to the subject of Bran. Cersei berates him again for throwing the boy from the tower, but when Jaime questions her about the assassin Catelyn Stark accused them of sending after the boy, Cersei denies it. When Cersei mentions that Robert himself at Winterfell said it would be kinder to put the boy out of his misery while alone with her and her children, Jaime figures out that it was Joffrey. Desperate for a pat on the head from that sot who sent the assassin to kill Bran, even though Cersei does not believe him when he tells her his suspicions, just as Jaime does not believe her when Cersei insists again that Tyrion is responsible for Joffrey's death. When she begins to unlace Jaime's breeches, he sends her off in anger. Jaime then has Brienne and Sir Loras brought before him, and the Knight of Flowers reveals that after speaking with the woman, he now believes she may be innocent. Sir Loras is dismissed, and Jaime reveals his belief that Tyrion is innocent and that the girl sent north with Steelshanks was not the real Arya Stark. His father has found some northern girl of similar age and appearance. and with her immediate family dead or missing, there is no one to say otherwise. Sir Jaime then commands Brienne to find and protect Lady Catelyn's daughters, as they both had pledged to do, and gives her the Valyrian sword he had so recently received from his father, explaining that it was forged from the metal taken from Eddard Stark's greatsword Ice, melted down after his execution, saying, "A sword so fine must bear a name. It would please me if you would call this one Oathkeeper. You'll be defending Ned Stark's daughter with Ned Stark's own steel. Sansa Stark is my last chance for honor." Woo! What a chapter.
I mean, so
loaded.
And if you want to know why this series is special, this is like probably the best example I can think of. Matt, there are so many things in here that are not true or like maybe a misrepresentation of the events. Like, there's so much to question in this chapter while also trying to figure out like what this new guard looks like, because obviously people are being raised to Lord. People are getting pardons. We're about to make some marriages between Roose Bolton and Arya Stark, who, by the way, is not actually Arya Stark. Dude, like, there is so many things here. And also, I forgot about the bit about Stannis. Like, oh, Stannis has left Dragonstone.
This is, yeah.
He's going to fight somewhere else. And then, of course, he ends up, here comes the cavalry at the wall. But it's like, man, I remember being very surprised by Stannis showing up at the wall, but again, it's right here.
This chapter is easily as important as like Bran 3 of a Game of Thrones. I mean, seriously, this is one of those chapters that is quite like Bran 3 in a Game of Thrones. That's where Bran has all of the first visions of the three, like the three-eyed crow visions. And he's seeing all these events that are going to happen. This chapter is one of those chapters that like we could come back to almost every chapter in, we'll be doing Boiled Leather, but in A Feast for Crows and A Dance of Dragons, where you can come back and be like, man, oh, it was like mentioned here. I mean, there's so much, dude. I mean, literally, for starters, now you have King Tommen. That's huge.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like literally King Tommen sitting there and he is signing papers. You've then got all, I mean, right here, Jane Poole. Jane Westerling are both in this chapter, right? Because Jane Poole is Arya Stark, the fake Arya Stark.
And a huge piece of the next two novels, right? Like that
is a huge, and she might be pregnant with Robb Stark's baby. And the craziest thing is looking at this now and seeing Tywin Lannister was scheming, man. He was just wheeling and dealing and he's like, I need you to bring the mountain back to life so that way I can execute him. To convince Dorne that we actually did.
And think about this. So he also predicts that Stannis is going somewhere else to fight, which ends up being true. Dorne is definitely pissed about the mountain still being alive. So in many ways, like if we look at what Tywin is expecting in this chapter, we can see how Cersei does pretty much the opposite. And you can kind of deduce what might be coming. Like Dorne is clearly going to be going north. Towards King's Landing, and we know that after we get into the Dornish POVs, but it would have been a different story, hadn't it, if he had executed.
He might have been able to. The craziest thing about this is Tywin might have been able to pull it all off.
It's a better chance than what happens, right?
I mean, so you're right now. It seems like Tyrion, because Oberyn lost, and that's the last thing we heard. We don't know that Tyrion is going to get he didn't take the black or any of this other stuff, right? You know, I mean, it's just, nope, Tyrion's going to be executed. All right, and then we know Jaime's going to free him. Even if Tywin doesn't die and Jaime frees him and he doesn't kill him, he doesn't kill Tywin, like, Tywin's not going to punish Jaime. He's not going to, they're just going to search for Tyrion. And Tyrion can just go over in Essos and it'll be, is what it is. But he'll still have Jaime and he'll still be able to say, I'm marrying him off. He's no longer in the Kingsguard. He'll figure that out, because Tommen can easily do stuff. He's like, I don't really, you know, it's not like Joffrey, where he maybe wants to like hold it over his head or anything.
Harder to control.
Right. And then he will marry Cersei off. Your piece. And I need it. You know,
get her out of there.
Your piece of that puzzle. I'm sending you back to Casterly Rock and you're going to go marry somebody.
Yeah, dude. And I do think the way that George introduces Tommen here is very much like a good example of displaying the intent without telling us the intent, but it's obvious with Tommen just signing papers or whatever's handed to him that he's meant to be pretty much a figurehead.
Sure.
Which isn't surprising because he's so young, but Tywin wants full control, no more influence from anyone else.
Yeah. It's crazy that he spent all that time working for the Mad King and doing all his bidding and stuff. And then he had to deal with Joffrey. And now he's like so many people in a Game of Thrones, just, or, you know, Song of Ice and Fire, where it's like, they finally reached that moment where it's like, okay, like, I've conquered and now I can rule. How it always goes.
You're done, son. And really with Tywin, I wonder if he really thinks that Joffrey being killed was all such a bad thing. If he can get Tyrion out, he can now move Cersei out. Obviously, he's very disappointed with his children, but
if he could prove that it was actually the Tyrells, too.
Mm-hmm. Which is definitely something that's coming. Well, I don't know. He's going to marry off Margaery to Tommen, so.
Yeah, but they were going to marry Sansa to Joffrey, and then it's like, okay, now you can heal the realm, or, you know, however you want to word it. But yeah, I mean, Tywin was making moves, and then, but he is doing, look at the scheming he's doing here that is totally false.
Yeah, I
mean, he clearly, like, for starters, he's like, we're gonna go, you know, I mean, technically Robert Strong, who will become, you know, it was the Mountain, right? Mm-hmm. You see the zombie mountain in Game of Thrones, the show, but if they don't give him a different name like they did here, and try to pass him off as like a totally different person, because they do send a skull to Dorne later.
Yeah, that's right. God, it's this, so good.
This is his skull, which could actually be. We don't know. He might actually be like some sort of headless zombie. We don't know.
Oh, you think they've replaced the head so that they could send it?
I don't know,
man. Little head transplant.
I don't know. We're going to find out. It could be cool. I mean, like, there's a lot more magic in this in the books.
Yeah. What a cool.
And idea. Then he's like, we'll just make a fake Arya Stark. It is actually one of the things that, man, makes me. I actually like the show version more, where Tywin is at Harrenhal instead of Roose Bolton.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just think it's much better. But I wish they had kind of done the false Arya angle in the show too, because then it's like, oh, Tywin actually had the real Arya Stark, didn't realize it, and is now parading this false Arya Stark.
Yeah,
so it didn't happen that way.
Sansa's arc also would have been better in the show had they done that.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned Bran 3, but isn't it wild that we are having this conversation at the end of book 3 about Bran going out the window? Like, it wasn't just a moment to do something crazy in the plot, but it's something that is still affecting the two people who were there and that know, the only people that know. And then we go back to, well, when Bran was assassinated, who do you think that was? Which I know everyone says is Joffrey, but Jaime could be wrong still. Because, you know, we talked about there's a lot of different options there. If it ends up being Joffrey, I'm fine with that. Makes sense. It's cool. But like that, there's still ramifications happening from that. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's a big deal. Let's look at some of the other big stuff about this too. There's so much.
When it comes to weight loss, you don't need more advice. You need more of what works. That's Weight Watchers, designed for one thing: better weight loss results. With real coaches who show up week after week and host workshops and Q&As on a schedule that works for you. And real tools designed to take the guesswork out of what to eat, how to move, and how to build habits that actually last. Because real results don't just come from more advice. They come from the support to follow through. That's why Weight Watchers Core Plus members lose 3.5 times more weight than people who do it on their own. Get more of what works with Weight Watchers Core Plus. More tools, more support, more personalization, more of what actually works. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. In a 6-month clinical trial of over 370 people, those using Weight Watchers saw significantly better results than those following standard nutritional advice alone. See the 2025 study published in the AJCN.
Actually, I want to jump to the end. Something that I thought was cool, and this is just something I was thinking about, because obviously we didn't have this connection like the first time I read the books, because the show wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. But he gives Oathkeeper to Brienne. Jaime gives like his ancestral house sword to Brienne, and it kind of made me think a little bit about like that scene in Game of Thrones. epic scene. Talk about some of the good stuff in season 7 and 8. The scene where John is talking to Jorah Mormont about like his ancestral sword, Longclaw.
Yeah.
Like sick moment actually in the show. And it kind of was making me think about that, like about that moment. And maybe that's something like maybe Jon Snow and Jorah aren't going to have that moment or whatever. And maybe Brienne and Jaime will. Maybe that's a, could that's be. Like a thing where she's tries to give it back to him. And he's like, no, I've never been good at keeping oaths. Or something, you know, like it could be like it could come back to play that it's that sword. And that wouldn't be like some big, huge, monumental, you know, whenever we're talking about like the last two books, we're always talking about the big moments of who's Azor Ahai and what's going to happen to White Walkers and Euron. But it could be some small moments like that, too. Like that could just be a small moment that could be kind of cool.
Sure. Yeah. And those are the moments we kind of live for as people invested in the cast for sure.
Yeah. So that was another thing that kind of stood out to me with this chapter. And then, the other thing, you get to the lying and it almost, I've always looked at the who hired the cat's paw dagger from the outside, but rather than looking at it kind of at this scene. And I know Jamie deduces that he thinks it's Joffrey, but now I'm thinking more. I think it was Cersei.
It very well could have been.
Because it's like, she's saying no, this is the truth, and he's choosing not to believe it, but then he's also telling her the truth and she's choosing not to believe it. So like it would make sense, but you're reading this from Jamie's point of view, so maybe he thinks, well, she's lying and I'm not.
That's
but
right,
it could actually be Cersei actually lying and saying, you just don't believe me because she's Cersei and crazy, you know.
Like, there is so much in this chapter that is just either speculative or untrue. Obviously we have Arya, that isn't right. Arya. We have Tywin lying about the mountain, basically. What else is there here? There is the whole Stannis thing, which is speculative. Tyrion being claimed guilty, and Jaime's like, I'm not so sure I believe that. Like, it's like Jaime finally is starting to take the veil from over his eyes and see his family for like really what they are. Like, instead of just kind of noticing and being like apathetic, like, as long as I have Cersei, it's fine. Like, this is the chapter where he really starts to turn. But yeah, there's just so many things that are just up in the air in this one. And I think Tyrion's innocence is the most interesting, possibly because we know that Tyrion actually, and instead of just embracing his brother's trust in him, he lies to Jaime to hurt him. So Jaime then feels a fool. Who's to say that that doesn't end up somehow pushing him back into Cersei's arms later down the road? I don't know. Good.
Yeah. It absolutely could. Man, there's a ton of just tiny stuff too. There's so much that happens in this. Stannis, what do you think about them? Like they know right now that Stannis is leaving Dragonstone, but yet there's no move to say maybe we should like go take Dragonstone.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. I mean, there is a lot of turmoil going on in King's Landing at this moment, and then having to kind of reform a lot of lords and ladies and making sure that if you think about it, like a whole new aristocracy is like being formed almost. So maybe that's why. Possibly. Also, Pycelle's just like always wrong. Pycelle sucks. I hate that guy.
Yeah, so maybe they think, and you know, they expect that he's going, Tywin thinks, oh, he's going to Dorne, which is the opposite of, obviously, really the polar opposite of what he's doing. He thinks if he's going to Storm's End. I wonder, that is something interesting to think about. What would happen if Tywin would have seen what would have happened? Like, oh, he went to the wall. Like, oh, okay.
You know, like, yeah, because like he has Janice Slinton them up there, but like, I mean, maybe he has one of them kill Stannis in like his sleep or something.
Yeah, we just don't get to see all these things and how Tywin would have reacted to them.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I think
when Cersei's in charge, you know, then you don't really, you do get a little bit of her reacting to it, but honestly, like once you get to the Cersei chapters, it's her just like going crazy. And then the faith kicks in and it's just like you don't really get as much of Cersei managing the realm as you do with like Tyrion chapters. And
yeah. And I think some of that's intentional because, you know, whether you like Cersei or hate her, she's obviously been a victim of like
100%
patriarchal like
structure of this society. Sure. And her dad is just like, you can't rule, you're a woman. Instead right. of maybe if he had kind of tutored her, who knows? Now, the problem with Cersei is that she thinks that she's her dad.
Right.
She's not. And right. I that's not entirely her fault.
No one is really as good as Tywin. I mean, Tywin Lannister is the cream of the crop in all of Game of Thrones and so on.
Yeah, him dying is super pivotal in the story. It's an amazing moment for the story, but it is kind of fun to think about like Tywin scheming on, past this. But this is also a story of generations. Like, we have now seen so many people from that Ned Stark generation die. Even all the way up on the wall, like Corn Halfhand and stuff. Jorah, Lord Commander Mormont.
Yeah. Do you think about and that we got this a little bit in the last Jaime chapter too, but part of he's having this conversation with Cersei, but it's in the hand, it's in the Kingsguard. And that is something he kind of thinks about. He's like, never in here. This isn't like the place for that.
Yeah, he's starting to show respect and have some pride in his position and his oaths. And I think Jaime is trying to do better. And this chapter is amazing in the sense for Jaime like making real steps forward. Obviously, he ends up throwing the letter from Cersei in a fire later in the books, which is massive. But even here, to deny her, let's remember, this is the guy that couldn't help himself on his son's dead body.
Right, just like two chapters ago.
Exactly. And he's thinking about Brienne.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say, reading that, it just makes you think of because Jaime, I would say, is probably of the characters as you move forward, once you get into A Feast for Crows and you get into A Dream of Spring, he's probably one of the characters where I like fall off a little bit. Not that his story is bad, really? Not that his story is bad or anything. I think all the stories are great, but it's just like my focus and attention shifts more to like Jon Snow and Stannis and of like when I think of A Feast for Crows and I think of Dance of Dragons, my mind, the first thing I think of is like the wall and what's going on there, because we're really beginning to ramp up the Azor Ahai and White Walkers and conversations with like Melisandre being at the wall and Blood Raven when the cave with Bran, and like that's where my mindset goes, is much more closer to like how this whole thing is going to end. And then Young Griff becomes part of it. So it's like when I think of those books, I start thinking more of how does it tie into the end game, whereas Jaime's story is much more focused on the here and now and a lot of the small folk, Riverlands, cleaning up the War of the Five Kings. How are we putting this down? But then it does tie into Lady Stoneheart ultimately. But so it's just like I look forward to these Jaime chapters because it's refreshing for me in a reread, because it's not my initial attention span.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think I reread Feast for Crows like 7 times. And I feel like each time I reread it, I like Jaime's chapters more and more, because a lot of stories just have the war and never deal with the fallout of it. Whereas like Jaime is actually going through like the reconciliation process of like, how do I make everything better? And there's all these big questions where it's like the Blackfish is still out there. Edmure is still alive as well, which is kind of interesting. But the other thing is that there is very likely, I would say, to be a Red Wedding 2, with the Freys being on the receiving end based around what we see. With a bunch of like the cargo holds being terrorized and whatnot, and people are going missing, but there's a big wedding at the end of Feast. There's a big wedding coming for the Freys, and I think it's very likely that we're going to see a massacre at another wedding. So he's kind of the insight of that, but also he's the insight to Jane Westerling.
Yeah.
So I do agree with you, and that's the thing. I hear some people in my book community, they're always like, Feast and Dance are where it starts to fall off. And all I can think is like, some of the most interesting stuff is in there, dude. Like you said, all the Bran stuff. I love the wall politics and Jon Snow, Sam's journey.
becomes amazing. Maester Aemon will be with him. And then I love all the Daenerys stuff. I think it's great. Right. So you're right. There's a lot. I mean, the story really balloons after this point, doesn't it? Which you got to replace the cast. I mean, look how many people are gone. Yeah. And obviously I forgot, but Tyrion stuff is sick. I mean, it's probably the best. So,
yeah. I think I have, you know, and it changes over time, but I would say, I think Feast is probably in of the five books. I probably have Feast at three.
Okay. A lot of people put it last.
If you're ranking them in terms of what is best, I would certainly probably put Feast last. But
man, it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it goes to Storm of Swords, Game of Thrones, Feast for Crows, Dance of Dragons, Clash of Kings.
Clash of Kings, the Battle of the Blackwater?
Yeah, I know, it's so good. I don't know what it is about that book where it's like, I mean, just they're all fantastic.
The prologue, so yeah, and that's the thing. You like all of them. It's not like you're like, right, those two are like shit.
It's like saying, what's the, you know, you're ranking the top three Lord of the Rings movies. It's like, well, they're all freaking amazing, man. You know, I mean, right, but like, right. I don't know. Maybe I like Fellowship the most. I don't know. I mean, they're all great.
I change my opinion on that every time I change it on the Song of Ice and Fire reread too.
Clash might be my least favorite of the five.
Mine is
the Battle of the Blackwater is great, and Tyrion is great, but it's
you're beginning House of the Undying is in that book.
Well, I can name so much stuff that's in all the other ones, like Feast for Crows, sure. Cersei's Trust. We did this with your friend Joanna Reeds, mm-hmm. and one of our best performing episodes ever on YouTube in defense of A Feast for Crows. And man, that's all those Cersei chapters and Feast are so good. Sam chapters, so good.
Yeah, I mean, I really love the last two books. From my latest reread, and these change a lot, but my number one's The Storm of Swords. I think it's just a ridiculous book. I'm just glad it exists. Number two is probably A Dance with Dragons. Number three is Feast. I would say number four is Clash Kings, and my last place is Game of Thrones. Actually,
no, I can't have that Game of Thrones.
I mean, I love it all. But if you think about the scope, like the scope just is so absurd in the following books, and none of it would exist without the first book. So I'm not saying it's bad, but as far as rereading goes, like when I reread book one, is the one I'm like, all right, I've done this. I want to get to the other things. And I don't know if that's because it's the first book, so I remember all the details so well. Like, I don't really forget too much from book one. But by the time you get to Feast and Dance, there's so many details in there.
Yeah.
Also, the show doesn't have a lot of those details. So,
yeah. I almost sent you a clip today, by the way, and it is actually around this time. And I'd have to look and see what it was, but I think it's like season three or season four. It's certainly before where we're at right now. And it's whenever Tyrion goes to some council meeting that Tywin is on, and
he drags a stool.
That scene is 2 minutes long and there's not a single word spoken. And it's it's so good. And it popped up today and I almost sent it to you, and it's just like, Tyrion comes in last and he looks and everyone's kind of sitting down and you just get to see all this whole cast.
Charles
Cersei walks up and sits next to Tywin and nobody else sits on that side of the table and everyone else sits down and Pycelle is there and he kind of, you know, flops around and his chains jangle and everyone looks at him like he's super annoying. And then Tyrion drags his chair to the other head of the table to sit, you know, like to the other. It's so good.
I think it gets clouded now because of the taint people have from 7 and 8. But like, dude,
I think, you know what? I'm going to be honest. I think a lot of that's going away.
Oh, the general consensus from the people who are now watching it, I see it all the time. They're like, I didn't think season 8 was that bad. And we've talked about it, but it's very different to watch a show in real time to binging it. But also some people just aren't into the books, aren't very into the books. They don't care about the changes and stuff, which is fine. I'm glad. But there are some scenes in the TV show that are just all timers. Like that scene you just mentioned, 10 out of 10, phenomenal. I forgot most of it. I had forgotten.
Yeah, it's a scene that takes place that you would never think of as that impactful, but man, it's
so good.
Okay, let's finish up with some of the chapter here. Man, I mean, again, so much stuff here. So I guess we'll talk a little bit about the last little bit, which is Jamie and Brienne and Oathkeeper. And Jamie like puts it together. He's like, that's not the real Arya Stark, but we should find her because that's what we swore we'd do.
Yeah, pretty powerful stuff too. Like a lot of the themes of knighthood that we talk about with Duncan Egg can be found right here too.
Yeah, because remember this book, and this is why I love A Storm of Swords, is that, and actually I almost feel like this maybe should have been the last chapter of the book. Because the last chapter is a Sansa chapter, then you have the epilogue. But the thing that I loved about Storm of Swords the very first time I read it was that after you read the prologue, the first chapter is Jamie. And we had not, and like,
yeah, it's
like, oh my God, we're getting like a villain chapter because everyone has been heroes and Jamie has been built up to be the villain this whole time. So now look at where we're at. And we finished Jamie's story in A Storm of Swords. And we went to a guy who got his hand cut off. And now we're going through and he's totally transformed, right? We get to hear that, like that bath scene with him talking about the Mad King and burn them all and all of the stuff that he's gone through. And by the end of this, right, like a book ago, we were like, oh man, Jamie's one of the worst, right? He's the enemy. And now we're finishing his story and there's still obviously a little bit more Jamie to go because we'll get it in Tyrion chapters. But yeah, a little bit more.
Over a span of a book, finally get into his head. George completely changes the way that we think about him. Obviously, changes are happening to the character, but that's how good George is at writing perspective. You see that Jamie chapter, say that son of a bitch. And then you read this chapter, you go, that son of a bitch.
I know. And you like, you know what I mean? Like, now he's shoved his sister away. He's like taking the white cloak more serious. He's talking to Brienne and he's like, here's Oathkeeper. A Valyrian steel sword, right? That's keeping oath, and we're going to keep our oath. And you'll be defending Ned Stark's daughter with Ned Stark's own steel. Sansa Stark is my last chance for honor.
Poetic and also very symbolic of what we see in this chapter with him losing the fight and kind of having to come to the realization that he's no longer going to ride the fact that like his title of being an amazing sword fighter. And he ends up giving up a sword, I would say metaphorically and also literally in the scene with Brienne. And in the chapter that he is now giving up his martial abilities, he is showing that he is smart, that he is capable, and that he is perceptive. And I think this is the beginning of Jaime Lannister realizing that if he wants to make change or affect the world, he's not going to be able to drive a sword through a back like he did with the Mad King. He's going to have to do with diplomacy and politicking. And conversations.
Yeah. And so it's going to be a while before we get to Jamie, by the way.
Yeah.
A good while before we see another Jamie chapter. And so think about where we're leaving this, because obviously we will see Jamie in Tyrion's chapter, Tyrion's final chapter. But Jamie's leaving this and he's like, all right, I'm reestablishing the Kingsguard like he did in the last chapter. He went in, told them all, you know, this things aren't looking good here. Okay.
Yeah.
We need to clean this mess up.
Yeah,
you guys let my son, well, he doesn't say his son, but you let the king die, who is his son. And but then you get to the next Jamie chapter. So just a preview of something we'll be talking about in months, I guess, is he is standing a planned 7-day vigil over his father's funeral.
Damn.
And he has a lot of time thinking. He feels he is much to blame for his father's death as Tyrion or Varys. You know, then he's wondering, and then that's where you start, you know, he's thinking, he's like, when this battle's done, I mean to call a council. He's thinking about Rhaegar's last words to him. Changes will be made. I meant to do a long time. Jamie recalls his recent questioning of, you know, of Chief Undergoer, which is a complete farce, as Jamie knew more than the man did, which is, you know, he's this old guy anyway, and his doodles keep the counts of prisoners in the cells, right? And so he's, what's going on in there? And Tyrion, and trying to figure out exactly all the stuff that comes back. So he wants to start investigating it. And then that's when he learns, right? Because remember, Tyrion tells him about Osmond Kettleblack and Boris Blunt.
And Moon Boy.
And Moon Boy. And so it's just like, that's where this whole deal's going. And right now it feels like, so like, oh man, we're ending in a good note. And then Jamie's boom, not going to be knocked back down another peg and have to.
He sure is. He's got a lot of challenges. He's not just a, you know, knight in shining armor, no pun intended. He's going to have to overcome a lot of things. And that's the thing I think is so interesting about these books is that everyone has to continuously overcome challenges. Like there's not really much of a reprieve. And I don't know about you, Matt, but I feel that in everyday life. One thing, like I got a text while we were on this podcast. My hot water tank is leaking in my basement currently. So as soon as I have to go tackle that. But you know, like that I think that's relatable in a lot of ways. And also motivations of characters is something that George R. Martin is like phenomenal at relaying. Even if it's different than what they're saying to what's in their head, which is quite often. But like this chapter lays out a lot of different motivations for people too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we were about to close up shop anyway, but we can definitely sign off now. So Jimmy can go take care of that when it rains, of course, literally. So we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 73, John 10.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com. We'll get back to you as soon as Matt's off his vacations.
Yes, seriously. And we will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.